Okay, this is Beautiful but Deadly,
where the beauty of makeup
meets the horror of true crime
with Chuck
and Liz. Wow, we were on that shit.
If you hear my cat,
he's on his shit today.
So sorry. He is like a baby.
Thanks. It's all clear for reading.
You're welcome. Hey, do you want to move those?
They're like kind of in my way. Okay.
I'm very cramped. We just ate.
So today's a two-parter. Sorry. Did you hear that?
Yeah. The witch's brew.
Oh my fucking god. This is a mess. This is a mess already. Okay. Get into this shit. So everything will be linked as usual that I use for the episode. Trigger warning. Murder, assault, violence. Just general violence, you know, just in case. Animal abuse and child abuse. So Edmund Emil Kemper III was born on December 18th, 1948, which is so weird to think about. Because, like, he's old now.
His grandma's age.
But I never think about him. He's younger than grandma. But I never think about... I never think about him, like, being born in the 40s is crazy. Mm. He was born December 18th, 1948, to Edmund Emil Kemper II in Clarnell Kemper in California.
So he is the third Edmund?
Yes.
All right. Lack of creativity in the family. Bad sign.
He was 13 pounds at birth, which isn't even shocking, seeing as how he ended up being 6'9".
13?
6'9". Anyways.
Yeah, he actually wanted to have a great rap career.
He has two sisters. Her name is spelled A-L-L-Y-N. Alan?
Aline.
I'm a fucking idiot. Aline.
What did you say before? Alan?
Alan. I was like, there's no other possible way to say this. So he has two sisters, Aline and Susan. I feel like that's a thing, though. The middle child is always kind of left behind, from what I've heard. No experience with this myself.
We don't have a middle child. Well, in theory.
Anyways, there's a term for this, too, called middle child syndrome. In 1964, Alfred Adler developed a theory on the importance of birth order on personality development. Healthline defines it as the belief that the middle children are excluded, ignored, or even outright neglected based on their birth order. In Adler's theory, he claims that although children may be born into the same household, their birth order greatly influences their psychological development. In his theory, he says that the older child is authoritarian and feels all-powerful due to the high expectations often set by the parents, while the younger sibling is treated like a spoiled baby and never rise above the other siblings.
Here's the thing. I don't believe that's the way anymore.
Okay, that's fair.
But I do think birth order does matter. If simply because the first child, it's like, oh my god, I have a baby. Like, this is all new and exciting.
Yeah.
But with the last child, you might have that in the mind of, like, that is your last child. I'm going to savor this even exactly. more. Exactly. Whereas the middle child, it's like...
Yeah.
But I do think birth order kind of does. Like, we both grew out of that.
Yeah, but I was more of like, you're right, like, I am in charge because I'm the older sibling. Mm-hmm.
But you grew out of it.
Yeah.
Because I got stronger than you.
I'm like, you, but stronger.
And I feel like, I don't know. Didn't rise above the others. I feel like we're kind of equal.
I would agree.
Like, we're hitting the same paces in life.
I would agree.
It's just that, I wonder if the ages between siblings matters. Because, like, for example, let's say, like, my dad. He had his older brother and then him within like 2 years or something. Mm-hmm. But then there's a 14-year gap between my dad and his younger brother.
Yeah.
So it's basically like there was only two kids.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
So I wonder if he didn't get treated like the middle child because for 14 years, most of his life, his kid life, he wasn't a middle child.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I do think the middle child often gets forgotten or not like cherished the same way. So that can make sense.
According to Adler, the middle child is even-tempered, but has trouble fitting in due to being sandwiched between the younger and older siblings. While this seems plausible, there's been some research that shows conflicting results, which makes sense. It would be interesting to see if something like this could have impacted how Ed was as a child, though, and how he was treated.
You also have to take into account he was a boy.
That too. And he had sisters.
A boy among sisters, and his parents didn't want a boy.
That's true.
It's a lot of things like that. Getting in, like, the age differences, what have you, the circumstances of birth. I feel like it's so hard to find age order because there's so many different kind of experiences that could affect how you treat your kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, what if you were really poor for your first kid, but then, like, you got a lot of money for your second kid? Like, obviously, there's going to be a disparity of how they're treated just because you have more money. It's stuff like that. It's too hard to make a distinction of, like, how they're treated because there's so many variables.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just me.
Okay. So, as, like, you'll see, he wasn't treated well by Clarnell. This theory also says that middle children may have trouble feeling equal to their siblings in parental relationships. So I wonder if that had any part in how he felt about his mother. The middle children also generally don't feel that they are the favorite child. It's usually the older one who is viewed as being special or the younger one for being the baby, like we said.
Yeah, because like the first or the last.
The first is special because they're the first. The last is special because they're the last.
Yeah.
And the middle child is just kind of there, which is kind of sad. But.
Yeah, it is sad. So what we're saying is stop at 2.
Oh my god.
That's the perfect way to do this.
Yeah, definitely. No problems there.
Or only have one kid, so there has to only be a favorite. You know, there's no other choice.
You said just have one?
Yeah.
I hate you. That's when I found out you actually wanted to be an only child.
I had no choice in the matter. You did.
And I mean the wrong one, not kidding.
Because it was definitely all up to you.
Oh, 100%. Okay. So it seems like Clarnell always kind of treated Ed as lesser. She just generally seemed like a mean woman as well. Even Ed's dad, who was a World War II vet, said that the suicide missions in wartime and the atomic bomb testings were nothing compared to living with her. So, a raving review.
Why do I feel like that's such like a 50s kind of thing? Like, don't you know that the suicide bombers were better than my wife?
Ball and chain over here.
Yeah. But no, she's genuinely a piece of shit, which is joking.
Yes.
Confirmed piece of shit.
Confirmed piece of shit, thank you. Early on, unsurprisingly, Ed started showing antisocial behavior, such as cruelty to animals. At 10 years old, he buried their pet cat alive.
What the fuck?
Yep. And once it died, he dug it up and decapitated it and then mounted his head on a spike. As you do.
Okay, here's the thing. I might be being bold here. And, like, I'll never have kids, so this won't happen. But if I were to find out that my kid was cruel to a singular animal, it's done. And by that,
it's
I mean
kid?
The kid's life. Yes, it's done.
Oh, my God.
You're going into an institution. I don't care.
What?
Like, if you can be cruel to an animal, you're fucked. Like, you're done. There's no second chance. You're fucked. Thank you. Especially burying a cat alive.
Yeah, that is
cruelty.
Exactly.
It's not, like, stepping on a cat accidentally or some shit. Or, like, even throwing something at, like, a bird to see what would happen. That's different than burying a cat alive. That takes a while.
Yeah.
You had to dig the hole, somehow hold the cat in that hole, bury the cat.
Yeah.
And then wait until it died. Like, that takes a long time.
He has stated that lying to his family about the cat gave him pleasure. He also killed another family cat when he was 13 because he felt that it was favoring his younger sister more, which really seems like something a middle child would do. Based on Adler's theory, hold on, I mentioned earlier, mixed with antisocial behavior and an abusive background.
Adler said if you're a middle kid, you're more likely to kill a cat?
Maybe. Not the killing the cat part, more of that, like, it was favoring the younger sister, which I'm sure he's used to.
That, but also, maybe it's because the cat, you didn't treat the cat well. Did you ever think about that, Ed?
Ed!
You know, maybe the cat knew. Oh, shit.
Okay, so when they were children, Ed also liked to play games with his sisters, like, gas chamber, an electric chair, where he would pretend to die by either gas chamber or electric chair, as the name suggests.
If only that was a prediction of the future.
And that's the fucking thing.
Also, can you imagine your dad being a vet and having your kids do that? Like, especially gas chamber during World War II? That's fucked up.
Yeah. After World War II, but yeah.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said during World War II.
Yeah, he was a vet during World War II.
Oh, I thought you were saying that this happened, and I was like, oh, no. okay. He also used to destroy his sister's dolls by decapitating them and amputating their arms and legs. And later said, I remember there was actually a sexual thrill. You hear the little pop and pull their heads off and hold their heads up by the hair, whipping their heads off, their body sitting there. That'd get me off. Now, when I first read this, it was in a, like one of the books that I have on serial killers. And at first, so it's just the quote, like huge at the top of the page. I thought he was talking about an actual woman. And then in small, small letters underneath, it says Edmund Kemper on like destroying his sister's dolls.
Bitch, why did you say that first? I was like, holy shit. But at first I was like, that's normal. Like most older siblings being assholes.
Especially their boys. Kids'
toys, the younger siblings' toys. But then it got weird. Yeah. He had to make it weird. He went from relatable to what the fuck very fast.
Yep. In the same book, which is called The Killer Book of Serial Killers by Tom Philbin and Michael Philbin, they talk about the abuse that Ed endured from not only his mother, but his father as well, allegedly. I haven't found this anywhere else. So take this with a grain of salt. But allegedly, there was a punishment one time where Clarnell forced Ed to kill his pet chicken, and then his dad made him eat it.
I feel like I hear that story all the time. I am on the side of, like, I don't really believe that. Because I swear to God, I heard that in a movie or watched it in like a movie, not just one, like a couple movies.
Yeah. And it's like I said, I like was obviously researching all over the internet. I read another book on him and I didn't see that. So I'm iffy, especially because, which I'll get to, he had a good relationship with his dad.
Yeah. It seems like an old wives tale because I feel like I've heard that so many times. That happened in our family.
Take it with a grain of salt. Oh, yes. That actually happened. So as far as I can tell, his sisters weren't treated so harshly. Kemper has also talked about an incident where his older sister Susan was kind of picking on him and asking him why he didn't try to kiss his teacher, which seems a little strange, whatever.
Okay.
And he replied, if I kiss her, I'd have to kill her first.
So that seems like sibling teasing, and that's a very worrisome response. Yeah.
In these incidences, I would love to know exactly how old he is. The timeline isn't really clear. He also discussed how when he was young, he would take his father's bayonet and go to his second grade teacher's house to watch her through the windows.
Can you imagine?
That's not worrying behavior. I don't know what is.
Can you imagine being the teacher looking at your window and just seeing...
There's a fucking second grader with a bayonet.
A second grader with a bayonet was probably as big as he is. Well, oh no, he's Edmund Kemper.
Yeah, he was probably big. He's a big bitch.
Okay. Did his parents know about this?
I don't know.
Was Pop's like, hey, where'd my bayonet go?
Ed also had some near-death experiences as a child. Both were actually caused by his older sister. One time she tried to push him in front of a train.
Oh, I remember that.
And then another time she pushed him into the deep end of a pool and he almost drowned. Which I would love to know how old he was for this as well. And exactly how close to drowning he was. Because not getting enough oxygen to your brain can have some serious like side effects.
Yeah. What is it with older siblings and pushing their, like, siblings into dangerous situations?
I wouldn't know anything about that. And, like, I also can't really tell if his sisters were, like, kind of abusing him, like, you know, Sylvia Likens, like, that kind of thing. Where not only the mother was abusive, but the children as well. Or if it's just regular sibling
shit.
But he's
like, hey, bully me.
What?
Because, like... But yeah, I feel like it's normal for, like, older siblings to be absolute assholes to younger siblings. We've all been through it. But, like, I wouldn't say you abused me, per se.
No. I mean, you've bitten me and everything, so, like, not even.
That is not even.
It's even.
That is not even.
It's even. I didn't, like, abuse you. I more picked on you, played pranks on you. You know, the normal stuff.
Pranks is supposed to be funny. You pulled YouTuber pranks on me, not actual pranks.
Yes, YouTuber pranks.
I don't know. I think we were over a different way. That's fine.
Oh my god.
You gave me a new phobia.
You're not salty at
you
all,
though.
You
gave me a whole new phobia. And you're like, I just like teased you a little bit. Like,
you're fine. okay. So growing up, he was really close with his dad. And was ultimately devastated when his parents divorced in 1957. Which is interesting, because a lot of divorces happened, I feel like, back in the 50s.
Yeah.
A little out there.
But, I mean, if you were married to Clarendon or whatever.
Clarendon.
What's her name?
Clarnell. After that, he went to live with his mom and sisters in Helena, Montana. His mother was an alcoholic and would often belittle, humiliate, and abuse him. She made him sleep in the basement and would lock him down there because she was afraid that he would harm his sisters. Which,
that's fair.
Depending on the time frame, could be fair since he murdered their cats. She would also mock him for being so tall and call him a real weirdo. So that must be nice to hear from your mom. You're a real weirdo.
How do you mock someone for being tall? Your legs are so long.
Fucking tall.
Hey, stretch.
Oh, how's the weather up there?
A tall drink of water. I'm more like a tall drink of shit. Am I right, kids?
Jesus Christ.
How do you make fun of someone for being tall? I can't wrap my head around what you would even say to make fun of a tall person.
I feel like you went through a taffy machine. It's that way that you know how parents just know how to get
The little snide comments. But like, I'm sure it feel like nothing, but then you think about it 10 years later, you're like, damn.
Yep.
A real weirdo.
Can you imagine?
I feel like mom would say something like that, but not in a mean way.
No, not in a mean way.
He'd find a way to make someone, found someone for being tall.
She also thought that if she showed him affection, she would turn him gay. And told him that he reminded her of his father and that no one would ever love him.
Hold on. So let me get this straight. Affection from a woman.
Makes you gay.
Makes you like men.
Yeah. Make that make sense.
It's like the people that like are afraid their kids are going to be gay, so they send them to like the all same gender school.
Yeah. And it's like, if they were gay.
And they're having the time of their life.
Yeah, they're having like living a dream here.
But okay. Any
fucking sense.
Or people that take away Barbies from their sons, like if they're interested in a female figure,
like why are you like, oh god, yeah, don't even get me started on gender stereotypes. I fucking hate that shit.
And like weirdly saying something's gay, like rewatch that Hillary Duff commercial and get back to me.
People now think that she may have suffered from borderline personality disorder. Not that that really gives her any kind of break, but they also weren't like big on mental health back then. So.
Also, it's. A diagnosis given from people that have probably never met her decades in the rear view. So
that's fair.
And also, are they psychiatrists? Or are they people being like, that's so borderline personality disorder?
It's probably psychiatrists.
I hope.
But you're right, they also didn't know her. There's no way that they could have like actually done any kind of psychiatric tests on her, so like they're just guessing. At 14 years old, Kemper decided to run away from home for what seemed like obvious reasons to me. And went back to California to be with his dad. When he got there, he learned that his dad had remarried and had a stepson. He stayed there for a little while, but then eventually his dad sent him to live with his paternal grandparents who lived on a ranch in the mountains of North Fork. Which is kind of fucked up in my opinion. You leave your family behind, go start another family, and when one of your kids shows back up, you're like, hey, let's pass him on to my parents.
But maybe he saw something.
I mean, that could be too. I'm just an outsider. But Ed hated living with his grandparents. He said his grandfather was senile. His grandmother was constantly emasculating me and my grandfather.
I would need an example. Because, like, what's...
I wish I could give one.
What's that emasculation in the 60s? Telling them to do the dishes? Like,
well, potentially. On August 27th, 1964, Ed's grandmother was sitting at the kitchen table when she and Ed got into an argument. After this argument, Ed stormed off and grabbed a rifle that his grandfather had given him for hunting. He then shot his grandmother in the head and then fired twice into her back. When Ed's grandfather got back from the grocery store, he went outside and shot his grandfather in the driveway. He didn't know what he should do next, so he surprisingly called his mom, who told him to call the police. So he did and waited there to be taken into custody.
Here's what I don't understand. What was his motive for killing his grandfather?
Oh, I get to that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When he was asked about it, he said that he just wanted to see what it felt like to kill grandma. He killed his grandfather, allegedly, so that he wouldn't have to find out that his wife died.
Okay, that seems fake.
That's what Ed says.
That seems fake as fuck.
Yes, I agree. Because, but at the same time, if he feels like he and his grandfather were being emasculated, he could see himself in his grandfather. And be like, my grandmother's a fucking bitch. You know what I mean? Like, his mom is a bitch.
Okay.
And so then he kind of, like...
feels for his grandfather?
Yes, it's connected. I would say feels emotion necessarily.
Not empathy, it's more like projection and then feeling bad for the projection in your grandfather.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's what I think it is.
Perhaps. But I also feel like, you might know what I'm getting at, I don't want to say it yet, but what he does later to, like, the system and how he acts to, what if he's just saying that's what sounds better?
Oh, exactly. That's what I was going to say, yeah. He's faking empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By making it sound like, oh, it's from my grandfather, not because of, you know, I have issues.
Yeah. So, I don't know how they got this, but court psychiatrists ended up diagnosing him as a paranoid schizophrenic. Since it was hard for them to comprehend that a 15-year-old could just be a cold-blooded killer. But, like...
Oh, we love psychiatry back in, like, the 60s.
Yes. Like, he didn't have any delusions or hallucinations.
You know, we've come a long way in psychiatry.
Yes, we definitely have. So after that, he was sent to a Tuscadero State Hospital, which was a maximum security facility that housed mentally ill convicts. So, at a Tuscadero, California Youth Authority, psychiatrists and social workers disagreed with the court psychiatrist's diagnosis.
Fair.
In the reports, they stated that they thought that Kemper showed no flight of ideas, no interference with thought, no expression of delusions or hallucinations, and no evidence of bizarre thinking. They also said that he was intelligent and introspective, which makes sense because Ed ended up having an IQ of 145.
So, essentially, he had all of his mental capabilities.
Yes.
He was fully there in the moment.
Yes.
He didn't have any delusions. He was essentially normal in that way. He was not schizophrenic. And he didn't have diminished mental capacity.
Yeah. So they re-diagnosed him with a less severe condition, a personality trait disturbance, passive-aggressive type. So to me, this doesn't really make much sense. Like, I looked it up, and passive-aggressive personality disorder just means that people express negative feelings and emotions subtly or passively rather than directly. I don't think murder is a very passive behavior.
Maybe this is what they're thinking. Rather than confronting it, they get rid of it.
Mm. Okay.
Because it's kind of like, you do that if you're passive-aggressive, you're just aggressive-aggressive. You're just, like, going at it. No matter where it presents itself, let's go. Whereas passive, you're just getting rid of it. Like, he didn't want to confront his grandmother and say anything. He just got rid of her. Maybe that's where they're getting passive.
That's a good point. Okay. During his stay, Kemper tried to be friendly with the staff and ended up being trained to administer tests to other inmates. Which also makes no sense to me. Doesn't matter if he's, like, been well-behaved. He's still a patient and a convict.
Here's the thing. You could be a normal person. Normal as in... not a criminal
or a killer,
not a patient, but you can still, one, give it wrong, two, be biased, and three, make it so the results are different.
Yeah, because he's not a professional.
Like, let's just say, I don't think he did this, I don't think he'd have a reason to, but let's say he didn't like an inmate and he fudged it so it looked like he had diminished mental capacity.
Mm-hmm. He could really fuck someone over. He also became a member of the JCs while in Tuscadero and said he developed some new tests and some new scales on the Minnesota Multifacic Personality Inventory, specifically an overt hostility scale. So the Minnesota Multifacic Personality Inventory, try saying that three times fast, is a psychological test that assesses personality traits and psychopathy. The MMPI has 10 clinical subscales, which are a result of answering certain questions, and they're hypochondriasis, depression, hysteria, psychopathic deviate, masculinity, femininity, paranoia, psychasthenia, schizophrenia, hypomania, and social introversion.
Okay.
Then there are 4 validity scales, which are designed to measure a person's, like, test-taking attitude and approach to the test. So you have Y, which is where someone is purposely trying to avoid answering truthfully. You have F, which doesn't stand for anything, it's just F, which is intended to detect unusual or atypical ways of answering the questions, back F, which is F, but at the last part of the test, and K, which is designed to identify psychopathology in people who otherwise would have profiles within the normal range. So these tests, there's 2 versions, have either 338 true or false questions or 567 true or false questions.
My eyes would go crazy after question, like, 100.
So they let him see inside the workings of these tests. Kemper would later say that being able to understand these tests helped him to manipulate his psychiatrists and admitted that he learned a lot from the sex offenders that he was administering the tests to as well. An example of this is that they told him that it's best not to leave witnesses, and it was best to kill a woman after raping her. So there's, like, a lot that comes into play, I feel like, with how Kemper ended up doing things later on.
And with the learning how the tests work, essentially to beat the system, makes a lot of sense. Because there are a lot of questions in modern day, like, questions that you never even think would be associated. Like there's something really random in certain tests that it's like, did you partake in fantasy play when you were a kid? Like, did you make up scenarios when you were a kid? Like playing house, for example.
Doesn't everyone?
No.
I'm fucking shook.
See, it's one of those things where it's like you would never even think about being an indicator of like anything.
Interesting.
Especially if you, like, anything.
Yeah.
If you don't, like, if you never had that as a kid, you're like, wait, people actually did that? People actually believed in that?
Yeah.
But if you did, you're like, people don't do that?
Yeah.
It's things like that. But if you know what, like, the correct answer is, like, let's say you, the correct answer is you did partake in that, then you can say it, true.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, he had such a high IQ that he could, like, figure out how to play the system
mm-hmm.
and, like, put it into play. But it's also, like, they're psychiatrists. Why don't they have the idea in their head of some people are really smart and could be playing us?
It was a 60s man.
I know.
I think a lot of it is ableism. Because I feel like even psychiatrists back then might have the preconceived notion of how certain conditions present and look. So like, for example, back in the day, people might see certain mental disorders as like, oh, well, they have no mental capacity. So anyone that has any mental capacity, they can't have that disorder.
Or, yeah, so like if you're like crazy, because, well, hysterical,
yeah.
There's no way you could be intelligent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it comes from, like, a lack of understanding. Also, I don't think they understood back then, because they didn't really have, like, the boom of serial killers yet, where they had started understanding.
That's true.
That they probably thought it looked a certain way. Like, we all kind of have that preconceived notion of, like, you can tell when someone's, like, creepy,
mm-hmm.
but you don't always know.
Exactly. We were talking about with our mom earlier.
Yeah.
And about how there's some people who, like, do you mind if we keep this thing? Because I feel like it's interesting.
Go for it. If I don't like it, I can cut it out.
Fair enough. Okay. So like my mom was saying that in our town, there was kids playing outside. This old man pulls up in a car. The dad was standing inside the door and sees him talking to the children. Comes out. The car takes off, runs a stop sign. Someone was talking about it on the open discussion page on Facebook about our town. And of course, someone was like, he's my neighbor. I've known him for 30 years. There's no way he could be doing anything like that. And it's like,
You never know.
You never truly know. Like I've said, BTK had a whole fucking family, part of the church, Boy Scout leader. He was a fucking serial killer.
And like now we know that because of like the news and like we had almost like the boom of serial killers. We can look back and be like, most of them seemed normal.
Yeah.
Like John Wayne Gacy. And we even have it where like in churches now, so many priests are getting exposed for being like
pedophiles.
Same with, like, the music industry. So many people are being exposed nowadays. Then now we have almost that evidence behind the do not trust anyone. But back then, you didn't really have
that.
That's
true. Everyone trusted everyone.
Yeah.
That's true.
As long as you didn't seem, like, obviously crazy or weird or creepy or whatever, you could get by.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if you knew how to play the system because you were smart.
Like our old buddy Ed. On December 18th, 1969, which was his 21st birthday, Kemper was released on parole from Atascadero. Against the recommendations of the psychiatrist at Atascadero, he was released into the care of his mom, Clarnell. At this time, she had remarried and then divorced again and was living in California. Kemper kept demonstrating to his psychiatrist that he was rehabilitated, so on November 29th, 1972, his juvenile records were permanently expunged. The last report from his probation psychiatrist said, Kemper worked quite a few menial jobs after being employed with the State of California Division of Highways. During this time, his relationship with his mom remained toxic and hostile, and they had frequent arguments that their neighbors overheard most of the time. And Kemper later said about the arguments, my mother and I started right on in horrendous battles, just horrible battles, violent and vicious. I've never been in such a vicious verbal battle with anyone. it would go to fists with a man, but this was my mother, and I couldn't stand the thought of my mother and I doing these things. She insisted on it, and just over stupid things. I remember one roof raiser was over whether I should have my teeth cleaned.
I mean, classic abuser.
Yeah. Once he had saved enough money, he was able to move in with a friend in Alameda, California. He still wasn't really able to get away from Clarnell, though, because she constantly called him and made surprise visits. At one point, Kemper was engaged in 1973, which is... I never knew that.
Wow.
And there's not a lot of information, because after his second arrest, her parents requested that her name not be revealed to the public.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, I've got nothing on her. At one point, Kemper was also hit by a car while riding a motorcycle. And since his arm was badly injured in the accident, he received $15,000, which with inflation would be about $90,000 today.
Holy heck.
Yep. With this money, he bought himself a 1969 Ford Galaxy, which is the car he would later use to pick up female hitchhikers while he had weapons in the car. I would like to point out that it seems weird to us now that people hitchhike, but it was like a really big thing back then. A lot of people were very trusting, so they would hitchhike.
Hitchhiking was modern. It was like the past's Uber.
Yeah, kind of. And fun fact, hitchhiking goes back to World War II, when cars were harder to come by and there wasn't enough gas. And obviously soldiers, as well as other people, needed to get around, so they would just hitchhike. According to Kemper, he picked up around 150 hitchhikers before he felt homicidal sexual urges, which he called his little zapples, and began acting on them.
I don't believe that, because he said he liked pulling off doll heads. And then he got, like...
Well, I mean, he could also just be lying. But I feel like it more started off for him, like, trying to... be around women.
Okay.
And, like, try and get comfortable with women because okay. He was so, like, I don't want to say weird, but he didn't have any interaction with them. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's kind of, like, almost like a young teenage boy. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to figure it out, but then he started getting the little zapples.
That's so fucking weird. Yeah. It reminds me of Snapple. I'm so sorry.
What it reminds me of is BTK Sparky Big Time.
Oh, my God. Why do you have to remind me?
Why the fuck they come up with these weird fucking names?
Because they have an unhealthy or weird connection to sex, so it's like they can't just be normal about it in any way. Like, just what?
But yeah, so we'll go into more detail on that in our next episode.
That's it?
Yep, that's his beginning of life. And then the next thing we'll talk about is murders and the victims and all of that.
Why did they let him out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Such a nice young man. Classic 60s. Classic 60s. It was like the Wild West.
What a nice young man he seems like. What do you mean?
Like,
he's just a nice young man.
I have so many thoughts and yet none are coming to me. Like, none are able to be formed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. It's a lot.
I wonder what would happen with, like, most cases if psychiatry was as developed back then as it is now.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what would have happened. Like,
he probably wouldn't have been let out.
Yeah. Like, how many lives would have been saved?
Yeah. And it's like, what was I going to say? When I first heard about him and I heard about, like, all the shit his fucking mom did to him, I felt a little bad. I don't feel like that now anymore. But, like, you know, you just, with some people, it's like, you don't feel bad for the serial killer. You feel bad for their younger self who had to endure all that shit.
Yeah.
But.
I don't know. It's. Can anyone else verify the abuse of his mom?
I don't know if his sister's ever said anything.
I guess we'll find out next time.
I don't
know,
to be honest with you. I'll do the research and I'll let you know.
But, like, to me, just the way he describes what happened with his sister, it doesn't seem like a big deal.
I mean, well, yeah. I mean, he said that she locked him in the basement. Do we have any confirmation of that? I'm not sure.
Well, he even admitted it was because she was afraid that he was going to hurt
his sisters.
So to him, that seems like abuse. To every normal person, that seems normal.
Yeah, so he's pointed to the cats.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad did say, but, like, they also ended up getting divorced. Who knows?
And it was the 60s where it was, like, the fun thing to try to dunk on your wife.
Yeah.
I just have so many questions. Mm-hmm. But.
On to your section.
Yeah.
Ka-chow.
So for my part, we're going to be talking about the Raw Beauty Christie, ColourPop, and Hot Topic situation. On November 12th, 2020, Raw Beauty Christie released a collab with ColourPop, which included Super Shock Shadows, glosses, and many other things. But at the center of all of this is a 12-pan palette named At Forest Sight.
Let me tell you, the collection's beautiful. I'm just saying.
Christie was inspired by mushrooms, moss, trees, and her home state in general. She wanted it to be cottagecore-y and, like, comforting. The collection was a hit with, like, literally everyone. ColourPop and Christie fans alike had nothing but good things to say about the collection and the palette specifically. But it eventually sold out, and it was never put back on the website. And to this day, it's not on the website anymore. I looked up, and there's, like, two Super Shock Shadows that they probably couldn't get rid of, and, like, two glosses or something.
Oh, interesting.
A few months ago, it came to everyone's attention that Hot Topic came out with a mushroom palette, which drew comparisons to Christie's palette immediately. Okay, so first, I will post the photos on my Instagram. First, Christie's palette.
Oh, your Instagram. Interesting.
Our Instagram.
Yes. Beautiful palette.
And then the Hot Topic palette. And on the cover is mushrooms.
Like, it does look like Christie's. Not as good. We'll say that. The quality's not there. You can literally just tell from the pans. It looks like it's just paper.
I mean, Christie's is cardboard too, but...
Well, how do I say it? It just looks cheap.
Cheaply made.
Yes.
Okay. In response, Christie made a video on August 23rd, 2021, comparing them. So essentially, a too long didn't watch. The Hot Topic palette is 9 pans only, while her palette is 12, but there are similar shades. The Hot Topic palette is $14.90, or was, because it's not available anymore. It was $14.90, compared to Christie's palette, which was $20. Also, the Hot Topic palette, no, I already said that. With initial swatches, they are very similar, but not exact. And generally, the Christie palette looked more pigmented. But on application, the Hot Topic palette seemed to blend better.
Oh.
And the differences in the color were more obvious on the eye. So, like, the Hot Topic palette looked very different from, like, Christie's.
Oh, okay.
Like, if she were to go outside and be like, what do you think of my makeup look? You'd be like, why does your eye look so different? Like, it's very gotcha. Obvious. Like,
okay,
it's different. I will be clear, though. They are pretty similar in thought. And it seemed like a copy to me. The question is that okay? And, like, I'll link Christie's video, but be warned, there is a lot of filler. Like, there is, like, 3 minutes maybe of, like, content that's actually pertinent. The rest is her, like, talking about her baby or hyping up her own palette and, like, saying she essentially invented colors to make the palette.
Oh, me.
Instead of what it was, picking colors.
Yeah. And I invented colors. Thank you.
But there's a lot of that. I'm being like, mine was so pigmented. I wanted mine to be so pigmented. Like, she formulated the colors at ColourPop
herself.
Like, it's shit like that. So, there's no relief. I'll bring up her video, though, so you can see the difference between the two eye looks.
Okay.
For you, and I'll post a photo on the Instagram. So, on the right is a Hot Topic, the left is hers.
Okay, yeah, you can tell the difference. Like, they're similar, but different enough that you can tell.
And, like, my favorite thing is that she's like, maybe this Hot Topic one is your vibe or, like, whatever, but, like, mine is, like, so much better. For me, it's so much better. It's more pigmented, luxurious. For me! Just for me.
Oh my god.
But it's better in every way for me.
Interesting.
So the pros. As to like why I think the Hot Topic palette is okay. You can no longer get Christie's palette. Like it's not available. Hot Topic is more accessible to the average person because in order to get ColourPop, you have to be able to ship it or find an Ulta.
Mm-hmm.
And someone actually brought this to my attention on Reddit. I won't say their name just in case they don't want to get like called out.
Yeah.
But they said, as a teen, I know I would have been unable to get the ColourPop palette because there's no Ulta's near me and no online shopping for me, but the Hot Topic one would have been accessible. Also,
point.
The Christie palette was discontinued, whatever it is, in like developmental hell, I don't know, for a while before the Hot Topic palette came out. So in that way, they could get like the same kind of story.
And it's cheaper.
You may like the colors in the Hot Topic palette more. Like, if you look at the two eyes on Christie, you might look at the one on the right and be like, oh, I like that one better, actually.
Yeah.
Also, it's cheaper by over $5.
That's true.
The con, it was her idea first. Do you have any more cons?
Me, the con. No, I feel like that pretty much covers it, because since it was like her idea first, they're kind of stealing her idea, and then it comes down to was hers, like, you can copyright, not copyright. You know what I'm trying to say? Patent.
Yeah.
Like, things. But, like, if she didn't, ColourPop didn't, then and I like, see no issue.
ColourPop does dupe stuff, too. So, like...
That is a fair point.
So, I don't know.
They dog them at their own game.
So, just on a broader subject of, like, what are people saying? Generally, this comment I also found on Reddit sums up what I've been seeing in YouTube's comment sections, Reddit, just social media in general. Honestly, if ColourPop would actually restock their palettes with any degree of consistency, then I think this was a bit shady. But there's so many people who wanted Rob Beauty Christie's palette and haven't been able to get it, and resellers are rinsing people for 60 to 70 pounds for the palette on eBay. So I'm glad there will be another option for people who want that color story. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want people to, like, buy the knockoff of your palette, have your palette available.
Stopped. Yeah. That's, like, the Sailor Moon collection that they had. Like, they had it come out, it sold out, they waited months to restock it, so then people want to go and get it again.
Yeah. Which is stupid.
Stupid.
So, a broader topic for this. What makes dupes okay to you? Are dupes okay at all? Is there a difference between an intentional and unintentional dupe to you? It's like, first, an unintentional dupe would be like the Tatcha primer versus the e.l.f. primer.
Yeah.
I think that they were developed completely separately of each other, not even thinking of each other.
Yeah.
But they just happened to be very similar.
Yeah, I agree with that. In like
quality, finish, you know,
yeah.
Use. Versus an intentional one, like everything that Makeup Revolution does.
Fuck. They do a lot of that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or is it I Heart Revolution? Shit, their names are very similar.
Yeah, they are.
I don't mean slander here.
Just one of those. But yeah, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like intentional dupes are kind of stealing someone's, what's it called?
Intellectual property?
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking. So...
But here's where I think it's okay.
Okay.
In a situation like this where the original product is not available, let's just say it's a hypothetical. There was a beloved highlighter, okay, that everyone loved, but it was discontinued.
Okay.
I think if you make a dupe of that, it's fine.
I agree.
Like, the original's not there anymore, but the product demand is still there.
Yes.
And, like, if they really thought that it was a good intellectual property and wanted to make money from it, they would be producing it.
That's true.
A second one would be if you can make it significantly cheaper. Like, for example, duping Natasha Denona palette.
I was just thinking that.
Like, I've had this rant before. You've heard it before if you've listened to the podcast, like, every episode, but...
It's fucking expensive.
It's fucking expensive.
Leave it at that.
You cannot justify the price
no.
to me, or just, like, in general, for why something is that expensive. And a lot of people like to say you're paying for the name. Okay, well, without her name, then, like, you can pay for what you actually are getting.
Yes.
I think a dupe is okay. In that
yeah.
situation.
It's the same reason I don't use, like, La Mer. So fucking expensive.
Like, unjustifiably so.
Yes.
What else? So, are dupes okay to you? Would you ever buy a dupe?
Oh, I would buy a dupe, especially if it's cheaper.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you think there's a difference between an intentional and unintentional dupe?
I think so, yeah.
Because, like, there are a lot of people that say that why can't I remember names?
Me.
This one L'Oreal concealer that I used religiously. Like, I went through 2 bottles of a concealer
okay.
of this. Was a dupe of Tarte's Shape Tape. I think that was unintentional as well. Because, like, the packaging is not the same.
I was going to say, if the packaging isn't similar, if they're not, like, oh, similar to this. Like,
yeah, then, like, it's a concealer.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
How
everyone wants to make a high coverage concealer.
Also, it is a great dupe.
Because there's a demand for it, you know?
I'll post the name of it whenever I post the episode of, like, the dupe, but it was very good. Very good. And I would buy it again. Like, after buying the Tarte one, I think I would go back to the dupe.
Interesting, okay.
Also, I feel like if your product is really good, then, like, you don't have to worry about it. Also, I feel like dupes are good because, like, what if you simply don't have the money for, like, Natasha
Denona? Well, exactly. That's why I buy dupes.
Dare I say it's classist to say that you can't buy dupes? Dare I say it? I don't know. I don't know if I'm daring enough to say it. I mean,
it's an interesting idea that I think should be looked into, and definitely.
Like, how different can an idea be? Like, for example, if you do a monochrome pink palette, are you ripping off Huda? Are you ripping off ColourPop? Are you ripping off like every brand that's ever done it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Concealers cannot be that different.
Yes.
Eyeshadow palettes, well, be able to be like more different than concealers, can't be that creative because everything's been done.
Exactly. And there's only, I mean, I'm probably speaking out of my ass on this, but I feel like there's a finite amount of colors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like...
There literally is. There's a finite amount of colors that humans can see.
Yes.
So. It's like there's only 12 notes. 12 chords? 12 notes? Whatever. In music. You're going to reuse everything. And it's kind of like if you've read The Odyssey, then you know the plot of every movie. Something like that.
Fair.
Once it's been done, it's been done. It's just how you put your spin on it.
Yeah.
Which I think is why we're getting so many themed palettes.
Because,
like, you can probably say, okay, there hasn't been a Mandalorian themed palette before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is exclusively ColourPop. But can you say there's never been a forest themed palette before?
True.
Or you can say that there, or another thing is like Disney palettes, mm-hmm, or Disney collections. Who was the first one to do it? Everyone's been doing it. Even Korean brands have been doing it.
Yep.
Like, I believe it was Etude House that did like a Tsum Tsum collection.
And I feel like, and I could be wrong, but when we were kids, I'm sure they had little shitty Cinderella eyeshadow palettes or something like that. Yeah.
So it's like, who ripped off who, if anyone?
Yeah. It's an interesting idea.
It is. So do I think Hot Topic kind of ripped off Christie?
Maybe.
Probably. But is it bad? I don't
Not
think
Not necessarily.
So.
Yeah.
I think it would have been worse had you been able to get the palette from ColourPop.
Yeah.
Also, I just thought of another thing where it would be okay, not okay, to do a dupe.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. If a big company steals from a small company.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, like, for example, Huda, allegedly, stole the, like, flower setting powder mm-hmm from Beauty Bakery. I think that was shitty because Beauty Bakery was a small business at the
yes
time. And Huda was a big business at the time. I don't think that's okay.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever thinks it's okay. Well, that's not necessarily true. But I think it's really shitty for a big makeup brand that has the money to do things to steal from a smaller brand that's, like, really trying to break into the industry.
Absolutely. I think in that situation it's not okay. But a big company stealing from a big company, like Hot Topic stealing from ColourPop, it's like, that's how it is. That's how it is. But yeah, if you're stealing from like smaller companies, especially, it happens a lot to like POC influencers.
Yep. And you're not giving them credit. That's fucking shitty.
It happens all the time. That is not okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Generally, I like dupes.
Yeah, I do too. Especially when they're cheap.
Unintentional dupes, I think you have no argument against, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because they're just like doing their thing.
Agreed.
Intentional dupes, I get the argument, but I'm still for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what do you guys think?
Let us know.
That's all from us today. If you wanted to share your opinion, you can either comment on our Instagram
at BeautifulButDeadlyPod.
If you want to send us an email of your opinion
at BeautifulButDeadlyPodcast@gmail.com.
Should we even shout out the Twitter? Have you even tweeted? We have a Twitter. We'll shout it out when we start using it. What else is there? Leave us a rating.
Oh, please.
That would be very nice.
Very kind of you.
Our 1 year anniversary is coming up, so that's something.
For everyone who listens to us, we really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. And look forward to what we're doing during the spooky season. We don't know what we're doing yet, but we're going to be
doing something.
We're definitely doing something. We're definitely doing something for our anniversary. We just don't know yet.
God bless.
Look forward to that. All right.
Bye.
Bye.